Shoot.
Recorded live.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Big and Fruity, a podcast for people who like a glass of wine. Sit back, relax, pour out a glass of your favorite wine, and join our host, Mr. Dave AC, for the next hour, while we enjoy some nice wine. And here he is now, the man who likes a good glass of red wine, your host, Mr. Dave AC.
Always puts me in a good mood. That's my good friend Ian, the Sixth Doctor, that did that intro using some lovely Podsafe music jazz intro. Welcome to episode 19. Can it possibly be 19? Not only that, it's a new year. Yes, happy new year to listeners, whether this is the first Big and Fruity Wine podcast you're listening to or whether you have been following us from the beginning. I'm your host, Dave AC, a regular here on TalkShoe with a number of different podcasts, but every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's for people like myself from the UK, 10 p.m. in the evening. I pick that as a time when hopefully it's not too late for those people in the UK, and maybe I might just get the odd person from America who's got home from work and having, is it called a sundowner or whatever they call, probably has to mix his own cocktails in this day and age of sexual equality, but nevertheless, maybe at least relaxing and winding after a busy day. Unfortunately, for many people I know, today is not a particularly great day because it's their first day back at work after the new year. Talking to Jeff, the Seventh Doctor, only yesterday, and he was on his last day of holidays and was back into work today. So if you are one of the people that has had their first busy anguish day back at work, well, I'm going to toast your health in a moment and I'll tell you what with. It's strange, and I'm going to digress somewhat here. In fact, before I do digress, just let me say welcome Brian M. into the room, a self-confessed musician. The Imaginary Radio Show, and that website is www.thewagband.com. www.thewagband.com. I suppose I ought to put that link in the room for people to check out later. And he is indeed not necessarily a large wine drinker, but he enjoys a glass of mead. And just before we started the recording, we were just having a little talk, although it was a rather one-sided conversation, as Brian is not on audio. But I was just mentioning that my son indeed loves mead. And I think the first time he found that was from a place in the UK called Lindisfarne. And I put the link up. It's Lindisfarne with an E on the end. So that's lindisfarne-mead.co.uk, where you can get mead that seems to look at very generous prices to me. Literally, they are small bottles, but they are a similar price for a wine, but you're only getting perhaps half the amount. It's a half bottle, I think. And I'm just going to take a little sip of water, although I do have wine with me. So, yes. Strange. I always have the urge to cough when I come on these podcasts. Just one moment. That is always one of the occupational hazards of doing a podcast when you're the only one on audio, because you get dead air when you have to just take a little sip of water. I'm usually not too reluctant to talk, but I just had to catch my breath there a moment. Yes, just reading from this lindisfarnemead.co.uk site. Lindisfarnemead is a unique alcoholic fortified wine made from fermented grape juice, honey, herbs and pure natural water, made on the holy island of Lindisfarne off the Northumberland coast, of course off the UK. So that sounds as though it might be worth something to try. I'm sure there's different brands of mead. And let me read what Brian has put in. Thanking me for the plug, you're welcome. We pretend that in the US that we were part of medieval times and have Renaissance fairs where mead is popular. I'm sure it is. I don't know if it's medieval times, but I've certainly seen the reconstructions that you do of the early wars in America. Independence Wars, I suppose, is the correct term for those. So, yes, a good drink, and I would imagine at this time of the year, and I think you already said in chat, if you drink it with warm water, it is a... in fact, I think with my throat at the moment, it would go down rather nicely. But let me get back to wine. Yes, the wine I'm drinking tonight, I have put up a picture on TwitPic as per normal, and I will put the link in the room. And the URL for that, hopefully it is coming up now, is twitpic.com/82S, and that's small s, 4L5. I think that's correct. And the wine I'm drinking is a claret. It's a French Bordeaux, and it's a Grand Vin de Bordeaux, La Gardinière, I think it's pronounced, 13%, 2010. But I hear people thinking, that's strange. Why should David be drinking a Grand Vin de Bordeaux when the topic for episode 19 of the Big and Fruity Wine podcast is bargain wines? Well, I shall reveal that little secret in a moment. But before that, let me just remind you how you can join in any shows that we have in the future, as I welcome guest three into the room. Welcome, guest three. We've just been going about 6 or 7 minutes now. Yes, you can call in to the show ID, which is 112272. It's every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 10 p.m. for people in the UK. You can use Skype out if you wish, or if you're in the States, as this is a US number, the number is 724-444-7444, which I say if you have Skype out credit, you can also use. Or if you have a set of headphones and you're on your PC, you can call in for free using a SIP client, and the address for that is 123@66.212.134.192. And hopefully you may consider trying to come in live next week. I'll mention it now and mention it at the end. Our episode next week, number 20, is Not in a Bottle. And I'll explain a little bit more about that at the end. So, yes, I've got this wine. Let me have a little sip. Although claret originally meant that there were light-coloured wines, the claret-coloured jug, you must have all heard of that. And let me just put a link in the text as I get ready for taste for the wiki page on claret. Claret derives from the French word claret, a now uncommon dark rosé and the most common wine exported from Bordeaux until the 18th century. And it's now making a little bit of a resurgence. And it is a beautiful red, lighter red than you'll perhaps normally associate. And let me have a sip, and then I'll address what guest three has put in the text. Mm. And it's not quite the rarefied atmosphere one might imagine with the titles Grand Vin de Bordeaux, but I'll explain why in a moment. As it says on the back of the label, produced from wines blended by our experts, this typically red Bordeaux offers fruity, spicy notes with a balanced and harmonious mouthfeel. Serve, and oh, now we'll talk about that before I go on to that temperature. It actually is spicy, it is fruity, but it doesn't really have that intensity, although at 13%, it certainly hits the spot. But it's not, I would say, got that really licious sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, almost viscous feel in the mouth that some rich Vin de Bordeaux do have. But this is a little bit of a kicker. It says serve between 18 and 20 degrees centigrade. Now, I talked about this in the past, not from any great knowledge of my own, but certain red wines, the suggested temperature which you drink them depends quite often on the grape varietal. So something like a Pinot Noir, you would drink at a lower temperature than a Cabernet Sauvignon and indeed a Shiraz. Shiraz and Cabernet Sauvignons may suggest 15 to 16 degrees centigrade, which of course, you've probably heard, you know, you drink red wines at room temperature. Now, I've got a feeling that people in America don't quite appreciate that statement because, of course, the room temperature, certainly according to some of the friends I know in America, is near enough to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Here in the UK, of course, our room temperatures are nearer to 68, 70 degrees. But nonetheless, I am surprised that this claret is suggested at 18 to 20, which seems rather warm. I've got a feeling that the one I'm drinking now is more like 15 to 16%. Perhaps it would open up more. At 76, says Brian. Okay, well, I realise, of course, I shouldn't flippantly say the United States because I've got people that are living, at 8,000 to 10,000 feet above sea level in Arkansas or somewhere. That's not quite the same as living in Orlando, Florida, where even the winters seem to get down to a mellow 60 or 65. Anyway, I'm wittering on. Let me just finish off. So why then am I drinking a Grand Vin de Bordeaux, which sounds as though it is a rather posh wine, when the topic of today's show is bargain wines? Well, I'll tell you, it was a bargain wine. Well, certainly by UK standards, this wine's from the Morrison's supermarket in the UK, and the price was a lowly for the UK, £4.29. And I'm going to convert that quickly into dollars. I would say that's probably $7. Now, I should just say for our friends in the States that we do have a very high tax level on wines in the UK. And although my friend Ian, well, I've got more than one friend, but Ian, my other regular friend drinker, he will often buy a reasonably priced wine for $2, $3, $4, $5, where the cheapest wines in the UK now, and they're actually imposing a lower limit because they're afraid of younger people binge drinking, they're basically capping the lowest price of wines to about £4 a bottle, which is getting on for about $6.50. So in a roundabout way, I am getting to the point. This topic was bargain wine. So I went to do my shopping and I thought, right, I'm going to buy what I consider to be the cheapest wine on offer of a red wine. And looking down at the lower shelves, there were indeed just one or two wines that were at just under the £4 mark at what would be, I suppose, the $6.50. However, they were the very generic wines. For instance, they would be, say, wine of South Africa, or they would say wine of Australia. It was, it could have been sourced from all over the country, not from any one vineyard, not from any particular area, not from Victoria, not from Heathcote area of Shiraz country in Australia, not from a particular section. Even the cheapest wines from France would just say French red wine. And basically, they're what you might call vin de table. Now, here, the wine I spotted, it's a claret. It's from Bordeaux. It's 2010, and actually, that's a little bit earlier. They're only just coming on the available 2010 wines from France. And it's only $1 more to buy. The point being that this, in effect, to me, makes absolutely more sense than buying something that has been sourced from basically leftover grapes from other vineyards. So that's why I'm drinking a bargain basement Grand Vin de Bordeaux and yet talking about bargain wines. I'm going to just mention one more thing about this, and then I'm going to read some of the things in chat. And that is for New Year's Day, I was drinking a Chateau Neuf de Pape from France. It had been £18, so that had been what? That's getting on for $35. But it was sold at the supermarket at half price for £9, which is getting on for $6.15 or $16. But the point was, it was a much higher quality wine, and I have made this point before, because of the cost of bottling, the cost of shipping, the cost of labelling, the cost of advertising, and the all those things that go into it, basically the first in the UK, the first £3 of any bottle is nothing to do with the content. If you buy a £4 bottle of wine, there's probably 50p's worth of wine in that bottle. And to give the Americans a comparison there, if you buy a $5 wine, perhaps your taxes are lower, perhaps you're actually drinking a $2 wine, and the rest, of course, is the markup, the retail, and so on. Okay, let me have a read at what, yes, £18 gets three, but it was to toast in the new year. But I didn't pay £18, I paid half that, £9. Just for your general information, and I'm not a well-off man at all, I normally pay between £5 and £8 for my wine. But often those wines I buy will be whatever is maybe 25% off, or occasionally they will have wines where there are, let's say a wine is £7, they may have an offer which says the £7 a bottle, but two bottles for £10. And that is a way that I will make and get leverage and get some better wines. And of course, there are other places that I buy wines, and I will talk about that as we carry on with the show. But I just want to catch up with having two people in the room, what they're saying. So let me just read. Brian had put, and I'll read all Brian's comments and then go to guest threes. It's 76 degrees, presumably means now, but it's the humidity. I wish I could afford to be a wine drinker. That's a rather pathetic statement. I don't think so. One of the criticisms that, again, Ian, the Sixth Doctor, says, if he wants to drink domestic American wines, then he is well served and he gets a very good value. What we used to do is we used to meet up on a Sunday evening on Skype and try and have the same wine. But about the only time we managed to succeed, it was with something like Yellowtail, or a Gallio, or something from the Napa Valley. In actual fact, I've got one now. It's, I was looking at the bottle a moment ago. Let me see if I can just find it. Redwood Creek, I think it was. Redwood Creek Merlot. But it's very difficult for us to get the same wine and actually do a comparison taste over the internet, because the other thing we tried is that he originally comes from New Zealand, but here in the UK, wines from New Zealand have a definite markup because of the sheer volume that they can produce means that there's a sort of rarity value to their wines, and of course the shipping costs. Okay, let me just read again what Brian's put. Red wine gives me headaches. Well, it certainly can do, I suppose. Up to recently, I wasn't drinking heavily oat wines, but now I find that my palate has changed in later life, and I do find that I like especially Spanish wines, which are crianzas, are reservas, where they've had either 12 or 18 months in oak, and I find that they really are nice. I should just say for those listening that if I do drink a bottle of wine, it does last me 2 days. And yes, Brian, it was 18 quid, but that was for New Year's Eve. I think the dearest wine, one of the places I get wine from is Naked Wines. That's an online service here in the UK. And I think the dearest wine I've had from there was £27. So that's, what, $45. But again, they have a system called Cashback where, you know, you buy certain amount of wines. And I'll just put the link in for you guys to have a quick look at. It's called www.nakedwines.com/. It's called Naked because you're missing out the middleman. Basically, they're selling it straight to you. And let me have a quick look. And we're going off topic, but never mind. I'm in a relaxed mood. I've got my wine. I've got friends listening in the room. Let's have a look. Let's go. Well, they've got them in highest rated here. Let me have a look. £16. Oh, they haven't. They used to be able to look at them in price order, but they seem to have showed altered the way they do that now. Let's go to the white wines. Now, I can't very quickly do that, but I think the wines go between £8 and £80. But I certainly don't get wines of that kind. Anyway, let me just see what guest three has put in the text chat. I like organic wines. They have ice wines. Well, I know from Washington State in the States, they do ice wines, which I've only occasionally tasted. Blimey. I think the vineyards grow in Iceland are a very icy place. I think it's more like Washington. I'm not sure. And I'm just going to take another small drink and a slight pause. Again, sorry for that dead air. I'm just taking a breather. Let me have a little look. No, it isn't cheap. South African wine is great. Yes, I drink quite a lot of South African wine. Quite a lot of German wine producers in South Africa. In fact, there's quite a lot of German wine producers in Australia. But I do like South African wines, and I do like wines of South America as well. Yes, it was good. And let me have a little quick. Yeah, Yellowtail was awful. I didn't like Yellowtail. It tastes very, to me, very factory produced, very. It got a sort of chemical overtone to it, and wasn't really that appreciated. One of the favourite wines that you guys might want to try if you haven't already is I do like the Zinfandel from the States, from the Lodi area. So if you ever see some of the wines from there, they are very, very nice indeed. I'm trying to think of the actual name. Ravenswood, I think it is. Ravenswood Zinfandel. That is lovely. Let me have a little look more. And I'm getting completely off topic here, but nonetheless enjoying it. I would just, in fact, let me repeat for guest three the link that I put in before, and that is the... let me just scroll back somewhat. It's gone. Got so many links open now, guys. Let me just close that. And I'm just going to go back to my Twitter. Yeah, if guest three, you click on this link, you'll see a TwitPic page with the wines that I've drunk on the past episodes of this show. So it's the Claret today. It was the Chateau Neuf du Pape. That was the one that was the what I paid £19 for. McGuigan Estate Shiraz before that. Valpolicella, a Ripasso wine before that. Ripasso means pass through twice, where the grape skins, extra grape skins are added and twice fermented. Then there was a Naked Wines Carmen Stevens Angel Reserve Shiraz. What else? Beaujolais Nouveau. Greenstone Heathcote Shiraz from Australia. A Malbec. And then a lovely Spanish wine, Campo Vieja Rioja, which I never pronounce these properly. This is a beautiful wine if you can get it. In fact, let me put the link up. And I've got so many links open now, but never mind. And for those listening to the recording later, since I have people that have made the effort to come in the room, I'm sort of veering the topic towards their requirements. Hardy's Stamp of Australia, Simply Zinfandel, Penfolds, Rawson's Retreat, that's a rather nice one. Bordeaux Superior, Washington Hills Merlot, a Greener Planet wine, and a proper, the Redwood Creek is down there. Oh, and I must mention the first one, the Casillero del Diablo. That is really a beautiful wine from Chile. Really nice. They do a lovely Cabernet Sauvignon, and they do a lovely Shiraz. Casillero del Diablo. I even like saying that one. Okay, guys, well, let me just go to the wine fact that I have for this week, and then we'll talk a little bit about this cheap wine concept some more. And the wine fact I'm going to talk about is actually comes from a little Christmas gift I got off my daughter and her partner, along with other gifts. I got some Blu-rays from them, but it is actually a tea towel. You say, tea towel? Tea towel? That's not a very good present. Oh, but it is. It's a designer tea towel. And the URL for this is www.stuartgardner.co.uk. And he's a designer. And what he's produced, and the link that I put there, is a lovely, tea towel, not to be used. It's a decorative one, of course, on linen. And it's got Guide to Pairing Red Wine with Food. And it has a beautiful list of vintages and what you should eat it with. And whether it's ready to drink, whether it's... the key is excellent pairing with the food, a good pairing or avoid pairing. So I'm just going to give... While the guys in the room look at this link, and it's a long link, it's www.stuartgardner.co.uk/tea_towels/ a guide to pairing wine with rude food tea towel. Okay, here we go. Let me just have a little read through it. Let's have a look at, Chateau Neuf du Pape. The wine I was talking about. Let's have a look what it says here. Excellent to pair with beef and steak. Excellent to pair with braised meats and stews. Fairly good with chicken and turkey. Not to be paired with seafood. Let's have a look. Not to be paired... What else? Not to be paired with Mexican foods and so on. And for every different type of wine here, and it's got Cote de Rhone, Cabernet Sauvignon, Malbec, Merlot, Pinot Noir, Rioja, Rosé, Shiraz, Tempranillo, Valpolicella, Zinfandel, And it's a lovely little chart. I don't know whether you guys have taken the opportunity to just follow that link. And that was a lovely little present. And it's something I will refer back to many, many a time. So that's just a little wine fact for the day. Okay, guest three Slink says, what do you think of New York wine? I don't think I've drunk any wine from New York. South American wine is absolutely fine. Yeah, it's a lovely little tea towel. It's and it's got lots of information about pairing tips with food and information about the body and acidity of wine, grape varietals. Lovely little thing. Okay, I've been talking now for 30 minutes, and although I've got the guys in the room, it's just me talking, so I'm going to go fairly quickly now through some of the links that I had prepared for the show. And just before I do that, just let me mention that if anybody listening to this is on Facebook, there is a page for the Big and Fruity Wine Podcast. If you put in your search engine at the top of your Facebook homepage, just put in Big and Fruity Wine Podcast and you'll come straight to the page. It's a page where you'll be able to play past episodes. Of course, this is on iTunes after the upload. And of course, you can always find it on the TalkShoe page. And the TalkShoe ID, as I said, 112272. And of course, I do have a blog. And the blog page is, let me just make sure I get it right, because that's one of the pages I've closed. And it's Big and Fruity at wordpress.com, and there again you can listen to the actual past episodes and you can see the tweets for the show. And in fact, on the right hand side you can also see links to my vlog, which also ends each week with a wine. I do that every Friday, and that goes up on blip.tv. Okay, that's enough self-promotion, David. Let me go to some of these links. Well, I simply, before we started, went and put into Google is your friend, cheap wines. And then these are obviously skewed towards the UK. And the thing that I found out with many of the supermarket ones, of course, is that they do have deals at half price. And moreover than that, if you buy the wines by the half dozen, you do get quite a substantial discount, as much as 20-25% in some cases. Of course, this has to be offset somewhat if you have delivery costs. For the Naked Wines, for instance, it costs £5, $8 to have a box of wine delivered. So we've got, just going quickly through these links, Tesco's, which is one of our supermarkets in the UK, www.tesco.com/wine. Then the newspaper, the respected newspaper in the UK, The Guardian, which does have a wine column and so on, there is a great page at www.guardian.co.uk, /2010, and so on, and just put in bargain bottles wine review. And there they have weekly recommendations of reasonably priced wines. For instance, in Sainsbury's, Taste the Difference of the Côte de Rhône Villages 2007. Well, actually, I had a Côte de Rhône Villages from 2010, if you looked at that trip picker, and that was absolutely lovely. Right, let me go to the next one. And this is The Wine Buyer. And I'm rushing through these somewhat at this stage of the show. And it's www.thewinebuyer.com. And that again is an American one. Sorry, this not again. This one is an American one, should I say. And it's got featured wines, best wines for under $15. Let me have a look what it's got there. Raymond Rutherford, Napa Valley, Cabernet Sauvignon. Our price, on sale, $29.98. These are quite dear ones, actually. It looks rather a posh site, that, really. So there are two definitions, of course, of bargain wines. There are bargain wines that are basically very low-quality wines sold cheaply. And then there, of course, are end-of-line wines where they need to be sold off because they perhaps passed their best. And I'm going to just elaborate on that statement somewhat. And this is causing a lot of confusion, I think, with younger drinkers. As a person who's drunk wine for a long time, I do know that you obviously can keep wine. You can keep it for 2, 3, 5, 10 years, depending on the quality. If it's a Grand Vin de Bordeaux, you can easily keep it 5 to 10 years. But you can only keep it if you have a suitable constant temperature area. Now, in the United States, that will probably be a lower ground den where the temperature probably stays at a uniform 55, 60 degrees all the way through the year. Of course, you can put a refrigerator down there for your wine. Here in the UK, we generally just need something called a pantry, which is a small room off your kitchen, which doesn't have any heating, might have some outside ventilation, and it usually stays a good 5 or 10 degrees cooler than the rest of your house. But if you haven't got that facility, and I've said this before, the best wine cellar is the supermarket itself. Now, strangely, at the lower end of the spectrum, they nearly always say on the bottle, best drunk now, I'll be kept 1 to 2 years. It's not often that they say keep longer than that. Of course, it has to be a quality of wine. I suggest that people go to the supermarket, obviously be aware of some of the vintages. 2010 appears as though it's going to be a good vintage. 2005 was probably the best vintage of recent years, and 2001, I think it was also good. 2006 wasn't too bad. 2007 was a little bit poorer, and actually probably the best wines that you'll get in the supermarket very soon are 2010. Why do I say soon? Well, because a lot of these high-quality wines, as I say, are kept in oak for 9 to 12 months and bottled a further 12 months before they actually reach the supermarket. So it's only this coming year now that you will start to see those 2010. Of course, from Australia, the Southern Hemisphere, you'll be seeing wines from 2011 very soon indeed. Okay, I have sprinted somewhat through that. Let me look if I need to mention any other of my links, because I've got a feeling at nearly 40 minutes, that is long enough for one person's voice to stand out. And I think I will do that. And Brian has had to drop off. Guest 3 is still with me. But yes, I can't remember whether it's 2001 or 2000, guest 3. But that's nice. Just to give you an idea, I think the best wine I've got, and I have got a wine from 1990 that I've kept. I was going to drink it for my last birthday, but I was going out, so I didn't open it. But that was a wine that probably only cost £15 or £20 then, probably worth £80 or £90 now. Yep. And again, there are certain vintages. Just let me have a look. What I do have, guest 3, is I have a pocket wine book. Well, I have a few books, but this is Oz Clark's wine pocket book. And the great feature it has, just on the inside, at the front and the back, are vintage charts. And let me briefly look. For instance, for Bordeaux, some of the best years. Let's go to St. Julien and Polignac and so on. It's 1990, that gets a 10. 1982 vintage gets a 10 out of 10. 2005 gets a 10. 2000 gets a 10. Yes, it is 2000, not 2001. So the best recent vintages in the Northern Hemisphere and in France in particular are the year 2000, the year 2005, and the year 2010. And if you go further back than that, you have to go back to 89 and... Yeah, 89, and as far back as 1976. Ooh, I think that's enough wine facts for one day. So thank you for listening and staying with me, guest three. Thank you, Brian, for your contribution on text. And with that, I think I will end at 40 minutes, far and away enough of me talking on my own. And once I end the recording, I will just have one final toast. And we will close the show with our PodSafe Jazz Music outro. Thanks for listening. Remember, next week, episode 20 is Not in a Bottle. Heavens.